Hi, this is season 2, episode 4 of the podcast, The Four Boys Club. I'm Shaurya. Many a story have been written about what the greatest tragedy is, each with their own interpretations. And rightly so, there is no correct or one answer. And yet, I think we can say all these interpretations circle around one idea. The end of a life. Now, whether you think of it as death or whether something more arbitrary is up to you. The beauty of art, someone said, is that it can't be defined, or at least defined exclusively. To this, Anpak and Bandim both had faced their own shares of, well, a tragic life. Anpak's tragedy, not to downplay his affliction of course, was more direct, an illness that made him suffer and eventually led to his sad demise. Bandim's, on the other hand, was more, well, let's call it indirect. As he grew up, he found himself becoming someone he never wanted to be. The universal truth of it, because it is universal, became Bandim's tragedy. A tragedy that, unlike Anpak's, remained within him for much longer. Now, who would you say suffered more? Episode 4, A Tragedy. Contrary to what many people may believe, and let it be noted that this statement comes at the cost of sounding presumptuous, something we are all already guilty of, death is not the ultimate tragedy. Maybe there was a grain of truth in what Rowling said, that death is but the next great adventure. But that's for the well-organized mind, something many of us sadly do not possess. But we are not going to analyze what Rowling had meant by talking about death in the Philosopher's Stone. Nor are we going to debate why death should or should not be feared. What the greatest tragedy is turning into the kind of person you never wished to become. The kind of person you have resented. We are all stupid in our teens to think the world will let us be who we want to be. That it will make way for us to walk the path to our destinies. After all, why should it not? You will eventually turn into that very same person. And here's the tricky part. No one will grab you by your shoulders and throw you into that mold. You, and you yourself, will do it. Maybe you'll be aware as this transformation is happening. Or maybe that cloud of worries that always looms above your head as an adult will mercifully keep you in the dark. But there will come a time when you'll wake up and see yourself in the mirror. And identify that change hiding between the wrinkles on your face, among the grays in your hair. It will be the weight that has caused the slight slump of your shoulders, the vacuum that has sucked out the zest you once held. And you'll start to hate yourself for the person you've become. The same person from whom you at one point of time had wanted to be as far as possible. It will frustrate you, at least to begin with, especially if you were unwitting to this change as you allowed it to happen. Then it will hit you in the face like an incredible gust of wind that knocks you down. From there, you can either choose to accept it, which will mean two things at the same time. That you can live a peaceful life going forward, but also that you laid your arms, and with it yourself, in doing so. But if you wish to fight, you get to tell yourself at the end of it all that you stayed true to yourself. It was a painful, frustratingly agonizing journey. But you did not let it push you down. Remember what Laszlo Bain sang in I'm No Superman, which you may remember from Scrubs? You've crossed the finish line, won the race but lost your mind. Was it worth it, after all? Perhaps we have dilly-dallied quite a bit. The center of focus of this episode and the person in the midst of these thoughts is Bandim. Throughout his childhood, he harbored what we can call a sense of dislike towards the tyrant. Who you may recall from some of the earlier episodes of our documentary. The tyrant was named so by the boys in the club because of who he was. A self-righteous, cynical man who always wore what Anpak called a worry groove on his forehead. who, as a patriarch of the highest order with a strict moral compass, the needle of which would always be conveniently tilted in his favor, led his family with an iron fist, the kind of man who Anpak admired. The man Bandim, for the entirety of his adolescence, had resented. And the beatings, the regular cussing, the constant belittling, all of which were essential constituents of the brand of parenting the tyrant swore by, were not the only causes for this resentment. If you asked Bandim whether he loved his father, the kid would answer it in the affirmative, unequivocally so. If you asked him whether he thought the tyrant was the best dad ever, his response would be optimistically positive. If you asked him who his role model was and who he would like to see himself grow up to be, he would reply by saying, "Is that even a question?" But the actual answer were not the ones he expressed verbally to other people, or even in the speech he had to give at the tyrant's 40th birthday, which he understandably did not want to give but was coaxed into by his mother. "Maybe you should say how you hope to become a father just like him one day," Mrs. Asra had said. The answer here was shelved in that little corner he never let others see. Even Sarah, his sister, who he had called his best friend in the speech at the tyrant's 40th, was not aware of it. We don't know what Mrs. Asra truly felt about her husband. She did love him, of course she did. But whether she developed a similar shade of resentment over the years of living with him is something we are not going to talk about. Each marriage has its secrets, and no one outside the sacred relationship should ever think they are in a position to pass judgments about it. But herein lies a paradox. We may have painted the tyrant as a ruthless dictator, an antagonist in this tale, one who was selfish, deeply conceited, and used morality as an excuse to oppress those around him. But when you grew up with a man, the tyrant's father, who gave away the trust fund he and his wife had built for 15 years to a charity organization only so he could have his name in the papers, would you not reconsider? When the charitable squanderer, which I think as a name would fit well for Bandim's grandfather, would have his son's savings of more than a decade withdrawn and given away to a non-profit, which eventually up and left, no surprises there, would you still feel a lack of sympathy for the little boy who grew up to become the tyrant? Just like Bandim, the tyrant all through his upbringing wanted to be as different from his father as he could. The one who not just understood the value of, but could also exercise control and discipline. Not just in his own life, but others, more notably his family as well. Luck played its part in helping the tyrant. After the charitable squanderer decided to leave work at 43 and sit home and, in his words, concentrate on his life, the tyrant, then 18, had to take on to himself to take charge of the family. And without any reluctance or grievance, he did. Was glad, as a matter of fact. For now he, as the principal decision maker, had the authority he had always yearned for. The era of the tyrant had finally begun. He made money through his work, and made tons of it. Gave the tiniest fraction of it each month to his father, who gave it all away to some bogus non-profit he would read or hear about, still chasing the renown. The tyrant knew about it, but did not care much. What he gave his father was like a drop in the ocean. Besides, he did not want word to get around that he was depriving his parents. The line of work he was in, connections mattered more than anything. And what facilitated these connections was his good name. It is debatable to say whether the tyrant lived the rest of his life in the comfort of knowing he did not grow up to become like his father. In that was his arrogance to admit the truth. Because after he was left alone following his wife's death, with Bandim having moved away, he spent a lot of time with himself confronting realities he was too proud to admit until now. And these realities, which we will not be getting into because they deserve a separate episode, and something we may or may not circle back to later, told the tyrant the similarities he shared with the charitable squanderer went much deeper than their genetic makeup. Bandim, more perceptible than his father, did start to recognize at the turn of the fourth decade of his life the close similarities he shared with his father, Whether these similarities had already been there or were developed recently, Bandham could not say for sure. But after a string of jobs, none of which he could keep for more than a year, the knowledge that the woman he was in a live-in relationship with was secretly seeing someone else, and the deep loneliness, not to be confused with isolation, that he was beginning to feel as years went by, he realized he had become a bitter, grouchy, perhaps even insufferable man. All his life, Bandham had thought the control the tyrant exerted was a facade, a way of compensating the insecurities that he, the tyrant, housed within himself. And all his life, Bandham had tried to prove more to himself than anyone else that he, contrary to his father, did have control, that it was not a misconception. But now, finding himself desolate and sad, he felt differently. He felt empathetic of his father. The acrimony, which had influenced his thoughts about his father all his life, had as if started to evaporate. He hated himself over it, that he was letting what could only be a force of nature put him in the same mold from which his father was cast. Bandham had always yearned to be his own man. If not unlike, then certainly not the same as his old man. He loathed this realization, and he spent many a night unable to sleep. In a few years down the line, his girlfriend would admit she had been seeing someone else since a long time, and would do so with a long justification for her actions. Bandham would not care. He was just glad he did not have to pretend he secretly knew about it anymore. Another year later, she would leave him and move in with the other guy. During this time, Bandham had tried to set up a business of his own, sourcing hard-to-find magazines and selling them at a store he had leased. But of course, that failed too, only adding to his embitterment, making him the person he never thought he would become.